The SME Clinic, brought to you in association with Zenedin, your accountancy experts in supporting local businesses to grow.
And on this month's clinic, I'm delighted to be joined by William Namasny, who is a partner at Zenedin. William, you're very welcome back to the show and thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Amber.
So, William, when we spoke last year, you mentioned the difference between operating as a sole trader and operating as a company. For new listeners to the show, can you explain the differences here?
Yeah, so sole trade, Amber, is really where a sole trader operates the business individually. It's probably considered Ireland's simplest and most cost-effective structure. There's no distinction between an individual and a business when you're sole trade. There's unlimited liability in all debts and legal actions. And setting up a sole trade, obviously, is less paperwork and fewer setup costs. It's usually where a sole trade is where a business is starting off from year one, where you just have a single owner. It's an attractive option for entering self-employment with minimal barriers. There's no registration with the CRO, which is the Company Registration Office, and the only reporting requirement is to the Office of the Revenue Commissioners. You can, and maybe some financial institutions do require every so often that you register the business name with the Company Registration Office, but that's only registration. It can be done through an RBM1 form. But overall, a sole trade has simpler tax affairs and less compliance. The setup costs are minimal compared to companies. There's unlimited personal liability. It's deemed a personal investment, and also the sole trade is deemed a direct control. Whereas a limited company separates its legal entity from its owners, it affords its directors and owners limited liability. Personal assets of a director or shareholder are protected in the event of business difficulties. Setup costs for a company are a bit more costly. You have to do registration through the company's office. Here in Zenedin, we do provide that service, and it can take up to 5 to 10 working days. There is more onerous reporting obligations from a sole trader than from a company. From a company, you have to require to hold statutory documentation. That means you have to hold annual AGMs. There's monthly board minutes from a compliance perspective required. And also any decision making may require, depending on the structure of the board, it can be only completed by resolution, which can be a general resolution or ordinary resolution or special resolution. There's also another reporting requirements, obviously, to the Office of Revenue Commissioners, similar to sole trade, but also the company registration office obligations as well. However, despite that, the requirement benefits include enhanced credibility with customer suppliers. There's definitely greater opportunities for tax efficiency and structures with companies. There's also greater investment opportunities through the likes of equity, where you can finance a sale of share capital, or there's other schemes like your EIS scheme and also angel investments, which also are can be utilized through companies. So overall, companies, I suppose, while they are more complex reporting and have more regulatory compliance, there is more benefits probably in the basis that there's limited liability, and definitely probably when you as a sole trader will grow and enhance, there's definitely better tax efficient planning through companies and also exit strategies that can be used through companies as well in a tax efficient manner.
Okay. And William, have there been any developments in these areas since the last time that we might have spoken?
And I suppose not really overall from a sole trader perspective. The obligation obviously still remains the same with sole traders that they just report to the Office of the Revenue Commissioners. However, the companies, which be the CRO, the company's office, has become a lot more active in the last, I suppose, 12 months, really, on striking off where companies have filed late filing of returns. And there's four areas they've kind of honed in on, which is a really current development. And one is where, so for a company, you have to have register with the Registry of Beneficial Ownership. You have 5 months to register the beneficial ownership, and that's where, as a shareholder, you need to state to the Registry of Beneficial Ownership the ownership of your shares. We've noted recently with the CRO that the Registry of Beneficial Ownership have begun proceedings against companies where this is not completed, and they have issued strike-off notice in this instance. Another area where they have looked at is where, for a company, you have, for single ownership company at this moment in time, you require one director, and you also have to have a company secretary. Where companies have removed directors, have not replaced them, or secretaries have left, the company's office now are looking at these companies and are also putting them on a strike-off list for striking off these type of companies where you have the lack of a director or a company secretary. Also, a new initiative was brought in last year in November 25, where the company's office, I suppose, following a five-year moratorium, have recommended now strike-off notice to companies where there's late annual returns. And they'll go back, this is where from 2019 really onwards, if you have late filing of returns, you would receive a letter from the company's office in the last 3 to 4 months issuing a strike-off notice. However, the one major option is that you obviously get all your returns up to date, or to negate that and reduce your compliance costs is where you can apply for a Section 3-4 application to the district court, which would eliminate the late filing fees and also allow company maintain their audit exemption. And just the last piece on that is the audit exemption piece. So in the past, where with a late filing of return, you would have to exercise an audit for the next 2 years. That means you have to have your accounts audited in the next 2 years where they would have applied recently for the audit exemption. that now has become less onerous in that they have now stated that if your filing return is late, one of the next 5 years, you will not lose your audit exemption. So you can afford to have a late filing return, one in 5 years, and retain your audit exemption. So there are the four main areas. But the main area part of that, I suppose, is the strike-off notice now that are being issued out to companies that wouldn't have filed a return in the last 4 or 5 years or more.
Yeah. And as you mentioned there, we'll say, you know, that strike-off notice for the companies that have those late annual returns. What would the implications for companies be there, William? And maybe is there a solution maybe to get their returns up to date?
Yeah. So as well, Amber, really where this starts off is where you have a late filing return. Your accounts must be filed with the company registration office 9 months after your year-end date. And they give you a further 56 days after the 9 months. So you're like up to 10 or 11 months maybe after your year end, you can file your return. Well, but that becomes late. There is a penalty of €100 and then interest of €3 a day until the return is filed. And the maximum penalty each year for that is €1,200. So it becomes quite onerous regarding liability-wise. And that will continue each year until you file the return. You also lose your audit exemption status, which we just spoke about. That can complete an additional compliance cost for an audit, which is a lot more onerous than having an audit exempt set of financial statements. Just recently, the CRO's advisory strike-off enforcement, we've noticed, obviously, step up a gear. And at the June CRO stakeholder forum, the register confirmed enforcement is now targeting 1,000 companies a day, up from 200, with the aim of working through the entire backlog, companies from 2019 onwards, by the end of the year. So what is happening now is companies that have not filed a return since 19 will receive a 10-week warning email or a statutory strike-off notice over the next coming months. That strike-off notice then will turn into the email will then turn into a strike-off notice, will be given another further 10 weeks, and then the company goes struck off and is eliminated. And then, obviously, that will impact you as a director or shareholder of that company. To negate that, you have either the incurred compliance costs of spending €1,200 a year to bring it fully up compliant, that could be 4 or 5 years, and also the additional costs of having an audit. To negate that, there's obviously, as I spoke about briefly, the Section 343 application. So this is where Zinedine can prepare a notice of application. We didn't get an affidavit, prepare an affidavit, which was sworn in by a practicing solicitor. Then this is lodged to the district court, and the affidavit is lodged with the CRO. And if the appeal then is heard by a district court judge, if that is granted, the orders grants an extension to file the return and sets out the date by which the financial statement will be filed. So what happens then is, once the order is filed, the accounts and the BO1 must be filed within a specific time frame, and this can be as many as 8 weeks after the court date, but the application and the B1, which is the annual found in file, the filing fee of €20. But that's the process. But really what you're doing here is you're eliminating all your late filing fees, and also you're eliminating your audit requirement. So you're reducing the cost element. But there is an associated cost element, obviously, with the district court. They are reducing the time frame on these, but we're seeing a lot of companies now taking these on. And obviously, us as Zinedine here, we can assist you on that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great to hear. William, I also want to talk a little bit about exit strategies as well for both sole traders and for companies as well. Have there been developments here in the last 12 months or so?
Yeah, I suppose, Amber, we spoke about this maybe last May last year. It was kind of anticipated that there's two main releases, I suppose, for sole trades from a capital gains tax perspective, now an exit for sole trades and companies. One is the entrepreneur relief, and the second was retirement relief. I suppose last year's call, I did kind of forecast that there was going to be a smaller moment. We were hoping on the entrepreneur relief, and that has increased now. The lifetime limit was previously $1 million. That has now increased to $1.5 million. So this is where you have a gain from a capital asset, a trading business asset. You can now, that gain, you can increase up to $1.5 million and only be charged capital gains tax at 10% versus a standard rate of 33%. So that's one development that has come in, and that's been come in since the 1st of January of this year. And that applies to both the sole trade and companies. The retirement relief, there has been no main changes. This is all obviously introduced to Budget 26. But another relief that I suppose for our farmers out there that has come in is the farmer structural relief. Now that has been here indefinitely since was introduced back to the Section 604 of the Tax Contamination Act, which was introduced back in 2016-17. And that was initially to be eliminated on the 31st of December 25 to Finance Act in of this year increased that to 31st of December 29. So it's not a 4 years extension on the farm restructuring relief. The farm restructuring relief is really where you have a farmland and you dispose of it. And then 24 months later, you buy another farmland, either by making the farm more efficient, if you prove the farm more efficient through improving the operational viability of the farm, or if you want to bring two farm lands closer together, then you can get a full capital gains tax relief on that farm. And that's been extended now to 31st December 29, which will be welcome relief for some farmers who want to take either extend their farmland or move lands closer together.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic to hear. Can you explain to our listeners maybe about these reliefs and when would be a good time to exercise the exit strategies for both sole traders and for companies, William?
So the entrepreneurial relief basically is for, it can apply for sole trades and companies. For sole trade, you have to have owner of business assets for a continuous period of 3 years of the last five. So really, if you own assets for 5 years and then you dispose of those chargeable business assets, you can claim reduced capital gains tax of 10%. For companies, you have to own at least 5% of the ordinary shares of the companies for a period of continuous period of 3 years of the last five, and you can dispose of those within any 3 year period anytime prior to that disposal. For a company, you also have to be a director or employee of the company in the for no less than 50% of your time in the service of that company in a managerial or technical capacity and serving the capacity for a continuous period of 3 years. So really, you have to prove to revenue that you've worked 50% of your time in that company over a period of 3 years of the last five. And once those are applied, you can apply the reduced rate of 10% on any gain, on any like disposal of your shares or disposal of business assets up to 1.5 million. For the family restructuring relief, again, this is the extension, but this was first initiated from the 1st of January 2013 all the way to the 31st of 2029. So it's where you dispose of your farm and you buy another farmland and purchase the farmland within that period of January 19th to 31st December 29, and you buy another farmland in 24 months of that period, you can get reduced exposure on the initial sale, which would have generated a capital gains tax liability. In order to apply for this, you must complete a farm restructuring relief claim form. So the relief is filed in return. So initially, when you sell the farmland, you will be subject to capital gains tax if the other reliefs don't apply. And basically, if you repurchase land within 24 months period, that period, you can get a refund of the capital gains tax paid. The initiative of this farm restructuring obviously is that what you want to do here is basically show you're either buying more land to increase the efficiency of your business, or you want to move lands closer together. And they're the two main areas. But there is a fairly onerous, I suppose, restructuring relief claim form that has to be populated and filed and returned. And your tax advisor would you advise of that. The only other downside of this is that you cannot purchase exchange that land within a 5 year time frame of the date of purchase or exchanged, or there'll be clawback of the relief. So a good time to exercise, I suppose, these two options. One, on the entrepreneurial relief stage, there's probably four times when you could do a look at this. One is when you're transferring a business to a company from sole trade to a company. And I spoke about this briefly in our earlier presentation last year, where you have a sole trade and you want to make it a bigger, enhancing your business, and you want to make it growing, and you're going into a company, and you create a goodwill, which is a figure in transferring it into a company. That goodwill figure then can be subject to capital gains tax. And if the entrepreneur relief applies, where you have the sole trade operating within a 3 year of the last 5 year period, you can get the reduced rate of 10%. Second area where this could be utilized is where you have a shareholder who wants to leave the company, and maybe would have to prove that when you're leaving the company, there's a disagreement. And if that disagreement applies, there's a test called a badges of trade test, then the shareholder will be liable to capital gains tax and disposal of his share. And then the entrepreneurial relief could apply in that instance. That would be the 10% relief. But that's a bit more complex. But once the badge of trade test applies, you will get there, and the capital gains tax treatment is applied, the entrepreneurial relief can kick in there as well. The other two-ish areas are fairly straightforward. One is where you actually dispose of your shares in the company fully, and the 3 year, 5 year period applies, then you can claim the entrepreneur relief. And also, if you want to liquidate your company and it's a members voluntary liquidation where it's deemed solvent, then the entrepreneur relief can apply there as well for the 10%. The farm restructuring relief usually is really only where there's an exchange of farmland or buying and selling of the land to bring the land closer together, or as I previously stated, to prove the operation and the viability. But overall, these two reliefs are a welcome increase and a $500,000 on the entrepreneur relief through the budget. But also the extension of the 4 years again on the farm restructuring relief gives farmers, given I suppose down the line with regarding the changes that's coming, maybe United and stuff like that, that they can restructure their lands appropriately like that. So two benefits I would have thought that came out of budget 26.
Yeah, certainly so. And William, there's a lot of information to take in there. So if listeners want to contact you to find out a little bit more, how could they do that?
Yeah, so most of our information is on our website, Emma, which is www.zenadine.com, or you get me personally, william.demessy@zenadine.com as well.
Fantastic. William, thanks so much for joining me on the show for the SME Clinic this month. Lovely to chat to you again.
That's great. Thank you so much, Amber.
The SME Clinic, brought to you in association with Zenadin, your accountancy experts in supporting local businesses to grow.